Hey everybody, welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about more of Hotel. As Liz was saying before we recorded, can you imagine if they made a whole show of the song Hotel California? Would that be messed up or what? Yeah, that's what. Should we just get into it right away?
Let's do it.
I mean, like, we ended with the worst detective in history, seeing that a guy was stuck in a lady and was like, "Oh, you all missed this bottle of super glue. He's got that gorilla glit pussy. Negative. We gotta get him out of there.
Like, got him loose. You gotta cut this guy's dick off."
Yeah, that's the only solution I see.
Nothing solves the gorilla glue grip pussy like actual penis amputation. I'm set.
Also, what's like kind of weird, I was thinking about it, and granted there is a lot about this season that I do not remember, so I do not remember if this is an ongoing thing that will continue with this specific subplot, but like it doesn't really, I think they were maybe trying to rip off Saw with this element, but like it doesn't really behoove the mystery killer to like leave one of the two people behind, because then like now you're just being misogynistic, like, oh, if you cheat on your spouse, only the lady has to die, the guy gets to live. Like, it doesn't really behoove the murderer in any way to leave one of the people alive.
It's also like evidence, like, okay, fine, his eyes are out and his tongue's out, but he still presumably saw whoever did this, I would imagine. I don't know, maybe not. He was chloroformed or whatever. But he's still like, it's a clue, you know?
Like, yeah, potentially he could have heard. He could have heard something when he was unchloroformed. He might have heard, like, the person rustling around, the heavy footsteps or something. I don't know. It just seems weird. And also, like I said, I don't know for sure. So this may be like getting ahead of something that is an ongoing plot point. I don't remember, because if I remember correctly, this subplot of the show is one of the more stupid ones. So
yes,
it could be rectified later. I don't know. But I think it's a little odd that usually when there's like a quote unquote like theme killer, they don't leave a person alive unless they're Jigsaw.
Or the Riddler.
Or the Riddler. Does he know?
Right.
What was he cooking? Oh, that is so much of this season, is just, what was he cooking? Chat, does he know? But it's just all about this one guy who we're supposed to think is like a really good detective. That's what's strange. This is John. I don't know. Do we call him a main character? I guess. It's so hard to determine what's a main character in the show.
He's like a deuteragonist.
Yeah.
Probably. There's, like, he's like one of a group of like secondary protagonists, I would say.
I think you've got that about right. Like, it's kind of hard to nail down who is the hero this season, because, or protagonist, I should say, more, you know what I mean? But I would say, yeah, it's fair to say that John is in the, like, being presented to this in the story as like kind of that. Yeah, I think that. What's the term you use? Deuteragonist.
Nice. He's like the Jimmy Darling, kind of. Like, he's like in most of the show, and I feel like we're supposed to be rooting for him. But right now, he really lives up to his name of just John, and is just like guy who is a detective. And we're supposed to think, because of the context, that he's like really, really good at it. But like, he's not, from what we've seen so far. Yeah.
I was gonna say, if you've ever played Heavy Rain, he's literally just the detective character from Heavy Rain. Also,
it's so much worse than you think, Ty. Anyway,
yippee.
It's so dire. It's so dire. Yeah. So, guy got stuck inside of the Gorilla Grip 9000, and apparently they had to cut his dick off. So now the next scene is, it cuts immediately to the station, I presume, it just like generic police station, and he walks in the door. John does, and the first thing he says is just, no lead up, "Do you have that report for me?" to someone off screen, and a woman who is off screen goes, Oh, well, like, you just left the scene. There's, like, not a report for that. And he goes, no, idiot. The crime, not the crime I'm working on. A crime that happened a month ago, you moron. He doesn't actually say that, but, like, that's how he delivers it. And I'm like, you are the worst boss, question mark, ever. Like, you walk in and you're like, do you have that report for me for a random thing 1 month ago?
I don't think cops, like, even good detectives get, like, secretaries or assistants like that either. You know, it's like, do you have the report for me? Like, I don't know. Did you type it up yet? You're the detective. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
the report, as though, like, there's only one that she's been tasked with for the last 30 days, I guess.
Not that he's working on it. No, yeah.
Cancel my 4 o'clock. I gotta go FaceTime my kid. And
which
so
he does.
This was. Did I say this came out in 2015? Yeah, 2015.
Yeah.
He sits down at the desk with what looks like an iPod that I had when I was like 13, which was way before 2015. And he's listening to, like, I don't know. I guess the report. For that, so, like, she hands him a tape that is, like, his recording.
Here's an iPod mini with one track on it, and it's you talking about a crime from a month ago.
We gotta find a better way to store these.
Here's your true crime podcast.
You should look into, like, Zunes.
Here's your podcast that you're putting on the public about our crimes. You can listen to it, but whatever.
They store every single report they do on one iPod. Each crime gets one whole iPod. He's, like, listening to his own, like, this is one of my least favorite ways to get exposition from anything that revolves around, like, a detective, which is, oh, I'm going to listen to me talking about previous crimes to give the audience information. Because, like, dude, why are you? You were there. It's your notes. You don't remember this? It was a month ago. all you need to know is that a guy named Martin was bludgeoned to death with a blunt object. There were gold paint chips from said object in his butthole and his skull, and they never found the weapon. Which kind of seems like they're doing a pretty bad job so far on this specific crime. that was just all for us to know, because that doesn't have, if, like, thinking about it objectively, there is nothing between that and this crime that he just walked away from that are even remotely similar. Like, not even close. Like, not even, share zero similarities except for that someone died.
We're going to learn that there is a thread connecting them, but I guess we don't know what it is just yet.
Sex. One of them had something in a butt, and the other one had something in a pussy. Therefore, crime.
Well,
yeah. GG, I'm the best detective. It's me, Light Yagami, or L, whatever. I'm really good at being a detective.
I can't help but notice none of you noticed this super glue bottle sitting on the ground as I was sitting in a chair in a fucked up way. I noticed it.
And then the real killer's like, exactly as I predicted.
And then there's a lot of tension in between them, and everyone wants them to kiss. That's just like, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So he's and listening then, to his own exposition podcast, which is for us only and for no one else. And he gets a phone call from his daughter who, okay, this is going to irritate me specifically because it starts their timeline bullshit already. We're in episode one where, like, no days pass and we're already doing timeline bullshit. So his daughter is calling him. It is nighttime because it is almost time for her to go to bed. This is, I guess, their, like, ritual that at bedtime she calls her dad if he's not home and he reads to her via FaceTime, which is already strange. Not that he does this, but that he will choose to read Little Women to her via FaceTime. And she is and she's roughly seven, like maybe 7 or 8 years old. But I would like to reiterate, this is like nighttime already. And she is calling because she is going to bed and they are doing their bedtime routine. In roughly 4 hours from now on this same day, he is going to go home and his daughter will be wearing outside clothes and will be nowhere near close to going to bed at all. And then after that, he will take her out of the house to get food. infuriating timeline. But yeah, he's like, hello, daughter who I love so much.
What if his daughter just wants to go to bed at 10:30 a.m. some days? I feel that. I've had days where I want to go to bed at like 10 a.m. Absolutely.
That's so real. Yeah, that's a hallmark of good parenting.
They want to. I mean, that I can attest to. They want to like stay up all night. You don't let them. That's, I think, I don't know that. I'm not like super dad, but usually it's like, no, you sleep at night. Otherwise, you know. The other parents will talk. That's the only reason I care. No, anyway. So
keep going till you collapse.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. And then like, what happens? Oh yeah. And then that's great too, because he's like, "Does your mom want to talk to me?" No. Which, like, I mean, you don't even put on an air for the kid or something. You know what I mean? Like, but. Or, like, he doesn't know in advance or anything. Like, they have FaceTime but not text message or whatever. So he's like, does mom want to talk to me? Nope. All right. Anyway. And he gets a phone call right in the middle of reading Little Women, but he's like, nope. Puts it on, well, whatever. He, like, sends it to voicemail, right?
He just, like, ignores it. Yeah, he's just like, no, I can't. Not when I'm reading Little Women to my daughter at 10:30 a.m. No,
yeah,
this,
like,
is an important time for me.
It's not just, like, his phone rings. Like, his secretary slash just another police officer, because when she comes into the room, she's just another police officer, comes in and is like, hey, you got a phone call. And he's like, fuck off. I'm reading Little Women to my 7-year-old. And she's like, they were pretty insistent. And he's like, take the message.
Yeah, and then he goes, and I am too. I also am insistent. I'm reading Little Women. Go home.
My plan was to come to the office to listen to my tape for 5 minutes and then call my kid before bed, okay? That's the plan. And we're sticking with
it. Yeah, the more we talk about what this guy's doing right now, this shit's crazy. Like, there is no reason for any of this. Especially because, like, also the criminal now, like, knows it's the right time for this, which makes me think it's not 10:30 a.m. Because who does a fucking I'm gonna kill a guy call at 10 a.m.? That's just rude.
Yeah, and, like, she's like, oh, he's like, really insistent. And I'm like, yeah, you're a detective. Like, for a guy who we're being presented as is, like, oh, this dude's problem, like every detective on TV, his problem is that he works too much and he's too lost in the sauce at work. And you'd think that, like, that kind of guy would be like, oh, they're really insistent that they want to talk to me specifically. Maybe it has to do with the murder that I just left. That's crazy. But he's like, no, just take a message. And I guess they didn't do that. And then he walks out of his office and his cell phone is ringing. And he answers it, and it's Jigsaw or Ghostface or whatever the guy's name is.
What's your favorite scary movie? Because you're probably going to see some references to it in this season.
Yeah. We have a checklist of things we're going to be stealing from, and we forgot what this one was going to be, but we've got a weird voice changer.
It's so funny too, because he picks up the phone and the guy's just like, "Hey man, what the fuck? I'm doing a murder and you didn't pick up. Come on, man! Like, take this seriously."
It's so weird.
He literally bitches. That's not even a bit. He's like, "Hey man, I tried to call you a minute ago. And you ignored my call. I'm like, did you tell the person you were talking to that you were the murderer or what?"
He's like, "Bro, my name is Shelly D. Killer. Why do you think I'm calling you?"
I couldn't tell another cop that I was a killer. I was meant for you're ruining this. I stuck a guy in a woman. It took me hours, and you can't even pick up the phone? What a loser.
I had to, like, jerk him off a little to get him hard until the glue would take. Like, it was a whole ordeal, and you don't even answer your phone? Come on.
Oh, can I call Mr. you back? Man. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. He's got, like, a little, I don't know, it's, like, it's a voice changer, but, like, the thing is that, like, properties that don't center around a killer that has a voice changer rarely do, like, a cool or a good one. And so this one's just like, yeah, this is a guy who might be talking on, like, a Nokia phone from 1998, maybe. The quality is just, like, average, and like this might be different than what the guy sounds like. They did this too. Whatever the one where, I guess season two, the like the present day story we got, the like subsidiary story of like the son of Bloody Face or whatever, they had him do the exact same thing where they were like, just make your voice like a little bit deeper and we'll throw like 0.5% of a filter on it. No one will know who you are. It will be so cool. It will be so sick. That's what they've done here, regrettably. Yeah, but not Ghostface and not Jigsaw is sad on the phone and is like, okay, well, since you didn't take my call earlier, I guess I'll just get straight to it. I'm at the Hotel Cortez in room 64 specifically, and I am gonna do it again. Which is like, you're gonna put another guy in another lady? Man, where are you finding these people?
I'm gonna do, it's gonna be a thematic killing. It's not like this, oh my God, why did I call you?
Always do this. I feel like I'm the only one putting in any effort, and then he just hangs up. Also, I don't remember, but I think it said that he was calling from an unknown number. They also are going to do a thing that, to be fair, one of my favorite franchises, Scream, also does, that's very frustrating, of just like, yeah, anyone ever can clone a phone. Ever. Everyone right. knows how to do this. Everyone knows how to clone a phone.
There's like, yeah, I feel like there's like certain little technology things you kind of have to like allow for horror. You know, like there's no cell phone signal here or whatever. You know what I mean? Because like modern technology does kind of fuck it up a bit. But, you know, so it's like, all right, I guess. Yeah. But like this is because there's supernatural shit going on at Hotel Cortez. It kind of like belabors it a bit where you're kind of like, so do like monsters know how to do all this stuff, like clone a phone and get a filter, or is this like a person who the monsters are leaving alone because he's also evil? Like, what's happening here, you know? But we won't find out till a while.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, or whatever. That's the slogan for American at least, Horror Story.
At least he's killing people too, and maybe they're Swedish, we don't know, so it's fine. Yeah, let him have the room, it's okay. But
yeah. But speaking of the Hotel Cortez, back there, the titular hotel of the season, a new guy dropped. His name is Gabriel, and he looks like he's from the game Jet Set Radio. And he like meanders in to get a room. And this is where one of what I think is going to be the most frustrating angle for me for the rest of it, because I don't remember if they ever address why it's like this. I don't understand why a hotel that is located in a tourism district doesn't just have people wandering in at all times, just like meandering. Because like tourists will walk into anything that looks cool. And this is like an old hotel. Like in Galveston, Texas, people just walk into the hotel lobbies all the time to like look around because they're like historic or whatever.
Or also, sometimes it's hot outside and you want to be in a place where it's cool, so you just like walk in a hotel lobby. Also, there are some areas with just beautiful hotels with history. Like, that's one really nice part about some parts of Chicago is, yeah, really nice lobbies. They'll have bars in them, too, that you can just be in.
And, you know, sometimes, too, even if you don't like any of those things, you got to use a bathroom. You know what's got a bathroom? A hotel. You know, it's like pretty common.
People be shitting. People be shitting in a hotel. That's true.
Absolutely. You don't even want to know what monster kills you then.
Yeah, if you just come into shit, they put you in a blender. It sucks.
I mean if you have to see what they do to you if you do drugs in this hotel. I mean, my God, compared to taking a shit.
Horror, this trope of like, oh, there's a hotel or a motel and there's like not really that many people around except for the guy at the front desk. That works like one of two ways. One, the main character.
West Virginia.
Yeah, you found a really rural, like, isolated hotel. Two, it's like The Shining, and there's a reason why there's no one at the hotel. In that case, the resort is closed, and, like, weather has kept people from showing up.
It's very remote, yeah.
Extremely remote. Or, like, the third one is, like, it's, like, on a highway in the middle of nowhere. So it makes sense that, like, you wouldn't see a guest at, like, most of the time. This is, I think, across the street from, like, the very well-known theater that has all the stars on the boardwalk. So I don't think
this
that counts.
this is a logistical nightmare. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't, it's not a good venue for horror. Like, I get they want to do a hotel, but it's always remote in these scenarios for this very reason. But for whatever, they decide to go on hard mode and just like, okay, screw it.
Like, to give you an idea that it is so, like, in the city that the problem they would be dealing with is random people showing up and shitting on the floor. Or, mm-hmm. like, random, yeah. like, drunks just stumbling in and throwing up on shit. Like, that's the level of in the city this is. Like, that's the concerns you would have, not no one showing up for a week. Like, the opposite.
Yeah. And, like, this guy who's showing up would be, like, I think one of the more common customers, which is, like, a guy who's looking for a room to do drugs in. Or, like, you know, like, bang a prostitute or something. Like, those would probably show up, I would say, I wouldn't maybe say, like, on the hour, but, like, you'd get a couple of those. They treat it like this hotel does not get guests, like, period. And I do not remember if they explain why. And if they do, I cannot possibly fathom, like, a satisfactory reason that they're capable of coming up with. Like, I guess, like, if you want to go the angle of, like, oh, it's a portal to another dimension. And some people walk in and it's just, like, an abandoned hotel. But some
it's
people
not.
Walk in and it's, yeah. But I'm pretty
oh,
sure
it's
that's
not
it. I am very sure that that's not it.
There's something from the ending I obviously don't want to talk about yet that is kind of like, no, it's not that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, yeah, you're looking for things like this. And it's just that people tend to die here and nobody tends to wonder why or check it out, I guess, or whatever. But
I don't know. And you can clearly book this hotel, like, online. The two Swedish women booked it online. So it's not like you have to, like, it's not
they
like
said
you have
this
to
shit
walk
was
in.
On Yelp.
Yeah.
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 100%.
Like, yeah.
This shit's on Yelp, and yet, like, nobody has mentioned all the bad things.
And it's not expensive for such a nice hotel, because this guy, Gabriel, argues about the price and gets a room, right? Like, he gets room 64, even, you know, from Iris. But, like, as we're about to learn, he's not a high-end, you know, L.A. guy or whatever, you know? So, anyway, though, he goes up to his room. Yeah, Iris doesn't escort him either. And then Sarah Paulson comes in and,
Yeah.
Her,
this character's name is Hypodermic Sally. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to drop that on the table. I'm sorry. I have to get it out of my system because that is real and canon and possibly the worst named character in any piece of fiction I can think of.
I have so many complaints about Sally this season, and when I watched this, I had no idea her name was Hypodermic Sally until this watching with, like, Amazon and everything with X-Ray. And
that's
it's like,
so funny.
That's hypodermic. Like, why? Like, why does she need to be hypodermic?
Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't think I felt very strongly about this character, like, when I watched it. I think she was one of my, like, I didn't really care, neither here nor there, but, like, thinking, if I remember what happens correctly, I think this was my second least favorite Sarah Paulson character, which is saying something, because Allie from Cult Exists.
There's, like, as this unfolds, too, yeah, there's stuff I can complain about with Sally, but for now, I'll just say, okay, she's Hypodermic Sally, she has, like, kind of, like, messed up frizzy hair, and she's, like, kind of gaunt and pale or whatever. I feel like she needs more makeup to pull off what they're trying to pull off, you know, like, she's, like, overdosed or something, you know, but, like...
But her lipstick's up, Slowbee. If everybody knows that, like, if your lipstick's messed up, that means you do drugs or you're, like, a
you're
prostitute.
You're high as a kite, I'll say, right?
Like, it feels a little bit like they're trying to play her as, like, a Courtney Love type character, but it just doesn't.
Nah, yeah.
It doesn't work.
I know what you
at
mean.
All.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's like.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the angle they were trying to shoot for a little bit, but yeah, not even a touch.
And then, so he goes up, and then Sally's like, I got dibs on him. Like, uh-oh, you know. And then, you know, he's going up to his room, and there's babies crying and women screaming, and there's a guy, Actually, I might have missed this with a reverse bear trap from Saw on his head and a rubber apron that comes out of one of the rooms.
A guy who looks like he is straight from the movie Hostel, which I don't understand because, first of all, we're never going to see that guy again. I'm fairly certain. And then, like, secondly, does this mean that, like, the hotel, like, rents out rooms for people to do Hostel stuff in? Because, like, the whole point of Hostel is it goes into, like, the infrastructure of why they're able to do their weird little blood sport hotel. And it requires a lot of back end, turns out, like a lot of back end. You can't just be like, yeah, you can kill people in our hotel. There has to be like a whole organized crime organization in the background, which I don't think is going on at hotel. There's some stuff going on at hotel, but not like that. But he's like, he's got the full butcher like apron on, and he's got, okay, I put in the notes reverse bear trap from the Saw movie, but it's just like an apparatus that maybe you'd see someone from Slipknot wearing. Not a normal guy is what I'm trying to get across. And like, there's,
it's like to get the vibes of S&M, but not really any like functional part of S&M, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's dressed for like something, but like it's not super clear what it is. And the only time people wear those aprons is usually when they're doing like dead body stuff. So it is what it is.
It looks uncomfortable, but I'm not sure for who is part of it.
And like the more confusing part of all of it, like the reason I even made a note about it, because like there's like all, again, just like the other ones, like there's babies crying and women screaming and nobody seems to notice. But it's more weird that that guy came out of the room when Gabriel walked by. People don't like do that in a hotel. Like, uh-oh, someone's walking down the hallway in front of my hotel room. Better walk out of my room and watch them walk by. Everyone knows that this is what you do in a hotel. When you hear someone in the hallway, you go out in the hallway and you watch them like a little freak.
And it would be totally inappropriate here. I also feel like you do the little like nod of like acknowledgement, just like if you have to pass somebody in the hotel hallway, like you know, like I'm not gonna stab you, don't worry, you know, that kind of like little
white people politeness nod.
Or like the even like I'm not feeling too polite, but whatever. I'll just give this to you so you know I'm not like you know
I'm not a weirdo.
I'm not gonna freak out.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, but exactly. But yeah. Oh, and then also passes Liz Taylor, who's we'll get to her in a bit. And then this is the part that I well, this whole part really, but like this whole scene. So Gabriel gets in his room and he's getting ready to shoot up some horse. This is a really nice hotel for that. Like, I'm not big on heroin culture. Like, I don't really know for sure, but I feel like you wouldn't do.
You're right, though. This shit's a little above the station of the average. Like, I'm just renting a room to do heroin in for 20 minutes. Like,
yeah, it's like a really nice hotel. It's like they're gonna bother. Like, they're gonna notice. You know, like even if you're one of those like heroin users who's just like, I like to throw my money around. Like, it's weird. They're gonna call the police. Like, a motel might not ask questions, whatever, but I don't know.
A 7-Eleven bathroom, even?
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of places you could do heroin, and I wouldn't think like a classy, ritzy hotel in the city is one of them, but whatever. You know, so yeah, he gets his heroin doing kit, right? And then, you get a hallucination of this season's monster.
If you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week.
The Addiction Demon.
Yay! Everyone's favorite boy, the Addiction Demon. If you thought the rubber suit man, the rubber man was cool, and the pig guy from Roanoke was cool, wait till you find out about this guy who looks like a head-to-toe used condom with the drill from Gurren Lagann as a strap on. And you might be thinking, Liz, that's a terrible description of whatever this is. No, it's not, dear listener.
It's pretty dead on. Yeah, like, assume the condom is, like, made, like, if you did the rubber man, but instead of rubber, it was just, like, flesh, like no nails, no hair, no eye, just flesh.
I feel like,
and it is a strap-on, to be clear.
Yeah.
Like fully externalized, it is just like a drill bit. Like I wouldn't be surprised if it had a switch on the side that made it spin. You know?
No, that's it, and that's the thing, and it's funny because like you've seen a lot of like flesh condom kind of monsters in like modern horror. I feel like that's almost tropey, you know, around this time period. But like the drildo. You know, that he's wearing, like, it doesn't match the rest of him at all. Like, it seems like an, you know, like an alt costume kind of thing, you know, like in a video game.
No.
Like, you know, like, oh, I unlocked this weird S&M thing and they just just plop on him, you know?
It feels to me like they originally were like, yeah, and he's got like a flesh drill dick that he actually rails people with. And they're like, that is not getting past the censors. It does have to be like a physical, separate,
not I can see
flesh
that.
Drill. Yeah, I think they were like getting fucked in the ass by like a baseball bat. That's cool. You can air that. Actual penis, no shot.
Yeah. So I have a theory as to why this specific monster, which in case we didn't say in the last episode, is played by my friend Alex Ward, which makes this so awkward because Alex is a delightful sweet boy who
Alex is like the nicest person. Yeah, great.
Who was not excited for us to get to this season, and frankly, I understand. It's mutual.
I get it.
I totally get it.
Like, but even when I was watching this, like, pre-knowing Alex and pre-doing this podcast, just when I was watching this of my own free will, I had a thought when I saw how stupid the addiction demon looked that I was like, I bet when they originally pitched this character, instead of him looking like he's made of used condom, I'm sure that they had a gimp suit-esque outfit. And then too many people were like, but that's going to make people think it's the guy from season one. And they were like, there's no way we can get away with putting any black leather on this guy, even though he's clearly got a strap on that is black and leather. What can we make him look like? And the only thing they could come up with was, we're going to peel Slender Man with a potato peeler and then give him the drill bit penis. That's, we got it in one. Here he is.
And before the addiction demon punishes Gabriel for doing heroin in the hotel, there's like a little intermission because he has this hallucination. And all of a sudden, the maid from before is there, like vacuuming, like, lots of messes in these hotels. Some people even take a shit all over themselves. And then it's like, well, thanks for that. You know?
Oh, also, in case you're wondering, if you're like, wow, are they really doing like literally getting fucked in the ass by having an addiction as like part of episode one? They can't be that on the nose. Dear listener, I regret to inform you, it is perhaps the most... I know writers who use subtext. They are cowards. This show is creating supertext, and I'm proud of them for it.
This is so... It's like a South Park bit. It's just like, oh yeah, that's the monster that does you in the butt if you do drugs, you know what I mean? But like, it actually is that. And it's like, it's incredible. Like, I don't know. It's so... I don't know why this is a thing in this season. Why the addiction...
This is good for the demon.
Yeah.
The demon loves this.
Yeah, the demon loves it when you do heroin, actually. Also, it's American Horror Story, and they, much like the addiction demon, have an addiction, which is they cannot make an episode one of this television show without there being at least one sexual assault on or by a character, which is what is happening. Thanks, American Horror Story.
Wouldn't you think it's like something like thematic is the way you do it? Like, I know, like, you know, he injects you with something, not, you know what I mean? Or like there's something with like your circulatory system, or I don't know. There's like so many creative different ideas rather than just like, yeah, how about he just like has sex with you with a drill penis and that kills you because you're
like
on drugs.
Like Ty said,
what?
Metaphors are for cowards.
Yeah. I like that you're like trying to get them to use the concept of contrapasso, something that was beautifully written into Dante's Inferno and other parts of the Divine Comedy. But this is American Horror Story, so they're not doing that.
It's so weird. It's like they bypassed all the low-hanging fruit and like maybe something's buried under the tree that's like just, oh, good, garbage. Yeah, there's
it's
the fruit.
It's not even
like,
a fruit.
Wow.
They just find like a rock on the ground and they're like, okay. Yeah.
Empty crumpled soda can, like, ah, delicious. We'll be able to get juice out of this. Like, what?
Eating a big chunk of dirt. This is a proto fruit.
Yum. We're so ahead of our time. We're making such a statement.
Oh my lord.
They sure do. Because we get a full
cop time.
Yeah, we get a full shot of that and then it's cop time. So remember how room 64 was important? They're gonna start mm-hmm. throwing around these room numbers pretty willy-nilly.
Like, I give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just if you care, it's room 64 that this is happening in. Will that be important in roughly the rest of the episode? No, actually.
Nope.
That might shock you, but like the fact that that is happening to Gabriel in room 64 and the fact that John is now entering the hotel and asking to go to room 64 are unrelated events that will not coincide with one another.
Maybe there is a little of multidimensional hotels going on. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, yeah. And then, you know,
hope so, right? Given what I just said and like the rest of what happens, you certainly would hope so. I hope it isn't super, super disappointing later on in the season when we find out that's not at play even a little bit.
No, but like, we need a new character now because Iris realizes John's a cop and gets the other front desk person, Liz Taylor. I'm going to give American Horror Story some credit here, actually, for 2015. Liz Taylor is the character that is a trans woman. She is a major character in this season. She's not like pushed to the back or anything. And for 2015, for like FX, I mean, this is pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
They do, and I've alluded to this in previous seasons, they do make the misstep, though, of casting Dennis O'Leary from the cast to play her, which, you know, okay, like...
No, not Dennis Leary, Dennis Leary, Dennis O'Hare, sorry.
Oh, Dennis O'Hare.
Dennis Leary's in this season of American Horror Story? I, like, had a Jimmy Neutron brain blast moment of, like, holy shit, how did I miss that?
Sorry.
No, I think Dennis Leary would fucking explode if you asked him to do this role.
Yeah, that would. Yeah. So my apologies.
He would pop like a little phobic balloon.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. So Dennis O'Hare is playing Liz. That's right. So let's see here.
Stanley and Larry previously. Last season he was Stanley, the guy with the massive hog.
Right.
And then season one, he was the nasty little guy, Larry, who hit that lady in the face with a shovel. Mm-hmm. Which also, going back to what Slow Beef just said, I also, a very rare moment where not one but two endorsements for American Horror Story. I also remember Liz Taylor's story being the only high point of this season for me. And when, like, Slow Beef says that it's that character is a trans woman. What it means is, like, this character's a trans woman and that's part of the story, mm-hmm. and, like, part of her story. Because, like, in the past, we've all had trans characters and people who are trans playing characters, but, like, either that's not a part of the story or they just, like, don't mention it. This is, like, actually important. And from what I remember, granted, it was 2015, and I don't remember everything in perfect crystal clear detail, but I do remember thinking, wow, they handled this, like, surprisingly well. They handled this topic surprisingly well and, like, meaningfully.
I think this is, like, a moment where they get it fairly right, you know? And as the as a cis hetero white guy, you know that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to trans issues in media.
Yeah.
I will add an asterisk to what I just said, which is I am not dying. I'm surviving this hill, no question. So if anyone has an objection or whatever, hey, you're right. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not standing up for American
My
Hardness.
Ass is folding like a cheap suit. I'm not backing a damn thing. Yeah. When it comes to standing up for American Horror Story, I'm as spineless as they come.
You got it. Exactly right. Yeah.
You could literally just be like, well, I don't know. And I'd be like, you know what? That's a good argument, actually. Fuck this show.
Actually, fuck American Horror Story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So yeah, so Iris is like, Liz, can you show this cop around? And Liz is like, okay. And then
and he goes, great, I showed up here alone with no backup, despite the fact that it was a murderer who called me and said, I'm going to do another murder. I was like, I'll just go this solo. I hope everyone's cool
that
with that.
That went so well just for the main character, who's a detective of the franchise Saw. That went so, so well that like it was a problem for three whole movies. It caused a ripple effect that gave us 9 to 11 Saw movies, if you count Spiral. Historically, a singular detective who's too wrapped up in his work and decides to 1v1 a killer who calls them and gives them a location. Historically, not like a super good call, just generally. But here we are with the best detective, John, whatever his last name was. Yes, because it's his name's John Lowe. Yep. Keep that in the bank for a while. It'll be important eventually.
Now, and let's take a break from that subplot to go back to Sally walks into room 64. She had dibs on Gabriel, but I guess the addiction demon doesn't know dibs or whatever. So
I wouldn't expect him to, frankly. I wouldn't expect that guy to understand dibs or shotgun.
Good point. So, but, you know, Sally's like, yep, that's happening. All right, back to John and Liz. I mean, thanks for that American Horror Story. Like, hey, did you not get what was happening before? Like, all right, yeah, I did. Thank you. So, anyhow. So, yeah, they're in the elevator. They're talking about the people who usually come to the hotel. And Liz says that John's lost something. Back to Sally and Gabriel, because this scene can't ever end. So Sally makes Gabriel, tell her, like, he loves her to make it stop. And he does. And then he, I guess, dies of overdose. And there you have it.
Makes it seem like maybe Sally has some modicum control over the addiction demon. Like he's like a Pokemon she can send out and make do stuff.
I think you're right. And I think that's like what we're supposed to get from this scene is just like, yep, Sally's controls the addiction or they have that. Yeah. You know, but whatever, you know, he's awful pyramid head to her, Heather, I guess, or what have you.
He is, isn't he?
I'm going by Silent Hill Revelation, fans, not the series. I know they're not in the game. Whatever. Anyway, so yeah. we're back to, let's see. Oh, yeah. So Liz shows John the room, which I guess is room 64, but that stuff's not going on. So I don't know. Then she's like, standing for a tip, and he's like, I don't have cash. And she's like, money's not anything. And then, thanks, you know?
Yeah.
What is this interaction?
A lot of people are saying this. They're going, like, money isn't everything. And it's just like, well, then what do you want? Like, he's a cop. He's not going to give you, like, a thing that's not much. Like, cops deal in money and not arresting you. And that's their two chips. that's all I got.
Well, he's not checking in.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, tip for it's what? Exactly, you went into a door.
That too. Yeah, like, and even if it was like a super fancy hotel where they'd expect that, not for a detective.
No.
Hi, I'm here to investigate a possible murder. Well, you could at least give me $20.
Honestly, kind of based. We should start demanding that police officers give us money if they want any information. That's not a crime, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not a crime. Don't look
you
it up.
You bribing me is fine, actually. So, you know. what do you call it? Yeah. Yeah, and then John like looks through the room, nothing, lays down to take a nap because it's tiring being a detective.
Insane behavior. Just walking into a room, checking it once, and being like, well, guess no one's here. Nap time. And, truly like a JRPG protagonist getting into one encounter and being like, well, there's a bed here. I might as well top up my HP real quick.
Save my game. Yeah, it's all good. Right. Yeah. And yep.
Holy shit.
Nap time.
And yeah, he literally goes to sleep, and then a woman beneath the bed is like, oh. And he's just like, yeah, whatever. Nap time.
That never comes back either. Like, we don't, yeah. Like that. Yeah, whatever. But the radio that woke up the Swedish lady also wakes him up. And then the little lads who love berries and cream are in his room. And he's like, oh, Holden, which we are supposed to infer is his child. Fortunately, his child looks like a little lad who loves berries and cream. It'd be really awkward if he didn't, because then he wouldn't match the whole vibe.
It's so funny, too, because, like, to make sure you can tell it's the same kid, they're like, the child has a mullet.
Yeah.
Like, this child has, like, so much hair on him.
Really blonde, too. Like, insanely blonde kid.
Yeah.
And he's like, my kid? And then he chases the kid. And so we're supposed to imply that that's his kid. That kid that we're seeing is his kid. I guess we'll get there eventually, because now someone elsewhere in a different part of the show.
Let's start another subplot. What do you say?
Yeah. Like, we're queuing up subplot number, what, 3, 4, 2?
Mm-hmm.
Something.
16, yeah. But
yeah.
Yep.
I forgot how much. Okay. So, like, this is. There has to be meaning here. The meaning is probably stupid, but there has to be meaning here. Meaning that, like, this has to have either been a favor, or, like, someone on the writing staff or the director or the producer has to just really like this band. So if you were, like, I don't know, listening to music before, like, 2005 or, like, anywhere around that area, you probably have heard the song Tear You Apart by the band She Wants Revenge. It's a very, like, noticeable song, and if you are of a certain age range, you almost certainly heard it, the one of the 5 million times they played it on MTV, VH1, Fuse, etc. So that doesn't sound like that big of a deal, right? Well, first of all, I activated, like, a sleeper cell agent as soon as it came on, because I was like, oh yeah, they love this song for the main character, in my opinion, which is Lady Gaga. I forgot how much they love to use this as, like, a weird metaphor, the song Tear You Apart by She Wants Revenge. And then I remembered that, like, also later in the season, there are going to be episodes titled, and I'm not joking, She Wants Revenge, and then afterwards, subsequently, she gets revenge.
Oh, God.
So somebody, either on the staff or, like, the writers or something, must really fucking love this band, because it is, like, an intricate part of the rest of the season. Starting with this, a whole
Your move,
montage.
Kojima.
Yeah.
God damn it. So, yeah.
Hot Coldman, eat your fucking heart out. Holy shit.
So, like... Yeah, we got a record of the song, and then there's the neon sign, why are we not having sex right now? And we have Donovan, a man in the tub, and a woman, the Countess Elizabeth, putting on lipstick, and that's Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Yep. Another Liz has hit the building, I regret to inform. This is the third Liz this episode. We didn't mention it earlier, but when his kid FaceTimes him, she tells him a story about how some kid at school threw up, and specifically mentions that kid's name is Liz, too. So this is the third Liz. I'm suddenly the target of this specific harassment, where three characters in 30 minutes have been named Liz in this show.
Well, if it isn't time for you to get a little bit of the Michael's curse.
And they're laying it on
thick. It's like my real life, what do you know? But yeah.
Well, if it isn't like going to office and seeing that there are 7 other Mikes today. Yeah.
Every Michael, Stephen, and John just groaned in unison.
Yeah, so they're getting ready to go party. They get all gothed up. They do a little cocaine. The addiction demon's fine with that.
A little.
They don't do a little cocaine. They have what I could describe as a Scarfacean pile at the, like, front of the mirror. And it's like, it's an unbelievable amount. It's enough cocaine for, like, a whole party for, like, a month. Like, it's so much. And it's like carving out a tiny line It, like, imagine just dumping an entire, like, bag of salt on a table.
Do you think the addiction demon is, like, heroin specific? That's so weird.
God,
but,
I hope so.
All right.
God, I hope so. It's probably,
I think it is. Well.
I mean, if it's summoned by what's-her-name, then it's probably her favorite drug. Do you think she's just like, I only fucking hate people who do heroin, like me?
Hypodermic Sally? I don't know. I think she would like people who do heroin just going by that. I mean, she took the name, you'd think, you know?
So unless it's a,
she gets really annoyed if someone who just like smokes weed shows up because she can only summon like a really little demon and it's like a cute little dog and it's not really like terrifying in any way. She's like, come on, do something harder. Come on.
What if Hypodermic Sally is like a nickname she hates and that's why she calls the addiction demon like, oh, look, it's Hypodermic Sally. Like, stop calling me that. It's
it's degrading.
I
want to
be Nice Hair Sally. Anyway.
I want to be Cool Lipstick Sally. That's like my whole deal. But it's so not, though. Which I know probably some of you who were listening just now to us describing Donovan and Lady Gaga were like, oh, the Countess, Elizabeth. And you might be wondering, are they about to do another Elizabeth Bathory thing? And the answer is kind of. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
Kind of.
A little bit.
Kind of is a very good way of describing this.
Yeah. They know one fucked up lady story, and they're going to stretch that over every evil lady that they have in this show. Much like other forms of media, they are going to get their money's worth about the Elizabeth Bathory story.
These are kind of vampires that prey on swingers, I guess, because they go to a movie that's showing in a graveyard, you know, very famous event that happens in LA, I guess.
So respectful.
But they see another, they start making eyes at this other couple. And then, like, in case you weren't clear that maybe some sex happened, Lady Gaga does the whole, like, V to her mouth licking, like, the cunnilingus sign, which is like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Like, a little direct. Like, I'll be real. That it'd be like if somebody just, like, started comedically, like, doing,
jerk
like,
off
a
hand
fake
motion.
Blowjob.
Or, like,
yeah, like, jerk off hand motion or, like, you know, like, sticking their tongue in their cheek and making it look like they got a hog going in and out. Like, I'd be like, I don't know if this is like horny.
Dracula.
It's like very funny.
Dracula seducing someone with like one hand as a circle and the other with his finger going like,
I want to
suck your dick.
I wish that's what this
season
would have been.
I want to fuck your blood.
No, Dracula. No, it sucks. No. It sucks, Dracula.
So they're back at the hotel penthouse where they were like before getting ready and everything, and it's time for an orgy, and everybody's really dressed except Lady Gaga, who's wearing like pasties and like, you know, like underwear or something, because like this is like the closest like Cable would let her to be like actually topless or whatever, you know. They start like, you know, like dry humping because again, it's, you know, like they're all dressed. But then all of a sudden, oh no, Lady Gaga has this like sharp fingernail thing and she like kills the one person. I don't even know how the other guy kills the woman he's having sex with.
Which
but...
I'll be honest, I think like a big blade fingernail is something that like particularly for the lady on lady, you know, portion of the event is going to be like a real hindrance.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're gonna cause a lot, like one bad come hither motion and it's GG. You gotta be careful with that.
Yeah, I feel like that would be like, you're gonna take that off, right? Before.
Yeah, like I am not letting you jerk me off with the blade nail. That's not happening.
Yeah, also, so, in case it's not clear, the song Tear You Apart is still playing. Like that wasn't just for the scene where they were getting ready. It's still going, so like we get the full song, like from start to finish. Also, the whole orgy scene, insane. There's like so much tandem flipping and swapping and choreography. I'm like, listen, myself personally, never been a part of an orgy. However, if you told me that there was choreography involved, I would absolutely say no.
It's funny because even though it starts with org, the same as organization, I find most of them to be quite higgledy-piggledy. Yeah,
yeah, all over the place. Body parts just asunder everywhere. Like, you don't even know what you're looking at most points. They are literally doing
like... We call
like,
it Caligula's maze, not Caligula's spreadsheets. And I think that's why.
The worst, though, is then they start drinking their blood, right? So they're vampires. Elizabeth Bathory comes full circle. Except here's the thing, they're not vampires, really. They're, like, kind of like, they drink blood. That's kind of it, you know? Like, they're ageless, but...
That's vampires, I think, core.
But there's no sunlight thing. They're not really strong or fast. I guess she's kind of fast. I don't know. But, like, you know, like, there's no, you can just shoot them.
What's her 100-meter time?
Yeah, but like, that's exactly it. Like, usually the dark gift is different for everyone, but they just seem to be like, I like blood. Like, they can just be, like, people who are just weird. Well, you know what I mean? But it's like, no. They're also, like, you know, kind of ageless, maybe. I don't know. But... I hate it. It's like, just do vampires. Like, there's no reason that you have to do, we need our take on vampires, so let's just make vampires shitty and call it a day. Like, all right, I guess. But, you know, that's what it is.
I had this thought, I watched the new Nosferatu movie last night, and I had the thought of, like, I'm not, like, a great litmus test of, like, what people think is scary, because I haven't been scared of a horror movie since I was, like, 8, maybe. And I watch so much horror that I am truly, and for realsies, like, desensitized. And then I hear people who are like, yeah, I watched this one zombie movie and it really scared me. And I'm like, that's just like so far out of my realm of understanding that it's whatever. But like, I don't think even most normal people are like, unless it's like the whole like 30 Days of Night situation, I don't think most people are that scared of vampire like now, currently.
That's okay.
I think clown registers as overall scarier than vampire on average and sexier.
Well, that's so. You know what? Okay, fair point to both of you, especially
clown
the sex
stocks are up.
But okay, you know what though? All right, here's the thing: you got regular vampires. They look like dead people. You got that going. Some of them like kind of warp and have like sort of supernatural powers. Like you have a template to work with. These are just some fucking idiots who are like, let's just kill a couple swingers and drink their blood. Like that's it. The blade nail is literally Lady Gaga's like best killing thing, or at least that I
can
recall.
What if Wolverine was really hot, but also like kind of shitty at his job, and was Lady
and
Gaga?
And had one nail. Yeah. One claw, and it was kind of short, actually. And I don't think you could really kill someone with it. But, like, you know.
Like, I think if you gave someone, like, all of the scenes of these characters and just cut the parts where they drank the blood and asked them to describe them, they'd just be like, murderous Europeans.
Yeah, like, exactly. Just,
hot
like,
goths.
Very European. Yeah, European hot goths that love to kill.
And are
like,
rich.
The vampire part is really, and like weird rich too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they love cocaine. So- you know what vampires love? Cocaine, famously.
It's like nothing about them. Like, just make them. Well, then they're just lying in there at the dead bodies, just blood going everywhere because they're fucking wasteful. Like, you know, like, come on. There's starving vampires in Ethiopia, etc. But like, and then Lady Gaga's like, call housekeeping, which, all right.
So yeah, he's like, oh, I love the party, but I hate the cleanup. And she's like, we're rich. We don't have to do the clean. That's the whole thing of our character. We don't do the cleanup.
Yeah, they don't tell you this. Terrible. When you check into a real hotel, if you kill somebody and there's like blood all over the place, you don't got to clean it up. You just call housekeeping. They legally can't like make you do it. They got to do it.
That's why you do heroin in the nice hotels. I get it.
That's also what the deposit and the cleaning fee is for Airbnbs. You're allowed to do like one murder there, but as long as you pay for that cleaning fee, fair. You don't have to clean up the crime scene.
Well, after all of this happens and we already had a FaceTime with our kids and the goths went and got ready and did a goth night party in a graveyard and then, you know, fuck some people to death or whatever. Well, it's time for the cop to get home, and it's the middle of the day still, and his child is awake. Which, at least 5 hours have passed, if not more.
Well, it was,
frankly,
it was like, nighttime when he got to the hotel, so it's nighttime now. That's just not clear because they've made, I don't know, nebulous amount of time. 3 hours, last 18 hours somehow in this one sequence with this one character. They do this a lot where they like have an idea of like what they want a character to do, and then they forget that like things take time to do, and they're like, oh, well, this was nighttime. Do we keep it nighttime? No, make it daytime. But then that means a day has passed. No one will notice. Just keep it in. It's fine. Yeah. No one keeps track of timelines or anything. It's fine. Make it daytime. Make it nighttime. Who gives a shit? This kid's wearing boots in the house and she's awake. And like 7 hours ago, she was supposed to go to bed and it was a different day, but the same day. But a new character just dropped, and it's a very confusing lady who is a doctor who makes house calls in the big ass year of 2015. And it's John's wife, Alex. Played by Chloe Sevigny, who was Shelley in season 2. And if you don't remember who that is, that was the like sex lady who loved
the
sex.
Addict.
Yeah, yeah, the sex addict who loved sex and then got her arms and legs cut off. But she's got her arms and legs now, and she's got to go see some parents who have twins who have whooping cough. And she makes a very confusing statement about not treating children who are anti-vax, but these children were anti-vax, so I don't know why she's going to treat them. That doesn't make any sense.
I want to go on record that I am extremely pro-vaccination. I am a very pro. My kids are vaxxed, everything, you know, including COVID and all that. Just making sure. But I hate, in a way, that American Horror Story is doing like this little like, hey, you know, we're pro-vax everyone, right? I just want to put that out there. We're pro-vax because, like, the vaccination thing doesn't really have a whole lot to do with the story. But, like, it comes up again, I think, next episode, too, where it's, like,
weird.
It feels very, like, I hate this phrase, like, virtue signally or, like, performative, you know, where it's, like, look at us, folks, you know. And again, it's good. I get, you know, they're on the right side of things. It just feels
awkward. Thank God.
In the middle... In the middle of American Horror Story, you think it feels weird that they feel the need in this horror story to be like, by the way, we know vaccine, we get it. Yeah. Like, it's like, yeah, you're a horror show. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, vaccinate your kids. Yeah, that's the moral of the show that has the demon that literally like, fucks you in the butthole if you do heroin.
I guess. Yeah. If you must.
Oh, you should only be injecting one thing into your body, and it's vaccines, goddammit.
The addiction demon turns around the folding chair and sits down like, we have to get serious here. We have to talk about vaccinating yourself.
Yeah. Do you think they were like, well, if we make a character named Hypodermic Sally and she's bad, people might think that we're against like all hypodermic stuff, even like
needles.
The good stuff.
Not the evil needles, the good needles that put the good stuff in you.
See, it matters what's in Sally's heart too, just like it matters what's actually in the hypodermic. You understand? Like we're
exactly. Oh. See, they are good at subtext. But anyway, she's gonna go. She's a doctor and she does house calls. And she's like, "I made you that quinoa casserole that you two like." And then the millisecond she walks out of the door, he's like, "Let's go get sushi." And I'm like, what is this weird sitcom bit about the quinoa casserole? Did you both just gaslight this wife and mother into thinking that you liked a dish that she made when you really don't? That's how you get served that dish more often, which appears to be what has happened here. That's the setup for them leaving the house at midnight. Who fucking knows what time it is? It's nighttime, and that lady had to go across town. And dear listener, would you believe me if I said there's still 45 minutes of television show left? of the first episode. It is. For what it's worth, the first episode, at least of this season, they've done this a few times. The first episode of this season is one of the longest episodes in the show. At large, not just like this season, like at large, it's one of the longest episodes.
And not just like spiritually, like it's actually longer, like chronologically, like it has more runtime.
It's denser.
And also they just jammed so much shit into it.
Yeah. Longer and denser.
It's not nutrient rich, you know, it's like a gobstopper where it's like, okay, I'm done already. Let's keep. No, we got more. Like,
I will say we have learned most of our characters at this point. God bless. So the last part of this episode is mostly going to be just kind of wrapping up what happens to them. But would you believe me if I told you there's a secret room with stained glass playing entirely Tetris on Atari joysticks with two weird babies in it?
And one more main character. We have one more main character to meet.
And a candy wall, like in Notch's house.
That sounds so cool. I can't wait to hear about it.
Me neither.
Well, you can hear about it next time. Let's see you then. It's gonna be. It's not gonna be good. I won't lie.
It's real bad.
Later.
Bye.
Later.